think one of the things that's exciting to me is the opportunity to hitch your interests onto something that's completely uncharted. I'm optimistic, as are a lot of people, that this will be a thing that offers breakthroughs that we weren't able to make in an iterative sort of way.
Dr. Clifford Cho is a surgical oncologist at the University of Michigan with a focus in cancer immunology and liver and pancreatic malignancies. Current projects in his lab include an exploration of the immunostimulatory effects of a novel form of tumor ablation called histotripsy. He has lectured on these academic interests in over 15 national and international visiting professorships and was named the James IV Traveler in 2014. He's published over 160 peer-reviewed manuscripts and book chapters and currently serves on the editorial boards of Surgery and the Journal of Gastrointestinal Surgery. Dr. Cho is the principal investigator of an NIH-funded cancer immunology laboratory that has been continuously funded since 2006 by extramural support from the Veterans Administration, National Institutes of Health, American College of Surgeons, and Central Surgical Association. Dr. Cho is an honors graduate of Brown University and an AOA graduate of the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. He completed his general surgery residency and postdoctoral research fellowship at the University of Wisconsin, where he served as chief administrative resident. He completed his surgical oncology fellowship at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, where he served as chief administrative fellow. He joined the faculty of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health in 2006 before his appointment as the C. Gardner Child Professor of Surgery at the University of Michigan in 2016. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Cho.
Thanks for having me.
Well, progress in immunotherapy has dramatically increased in recent years. Can you tell our audience what immunotherapy is and how it's changing the treatment and prognosis of some types of cancers?
Yeah, you bet. Well, that's a big question, but I'll do my best to narrow it down. So the idea behind immunotherapy is to figure out some way to allow the immune system to first recognize cancers as being foreign and then muster up whatever it takes to get rid of them. Truthfully, Allison, it's been sort of in theory only for such a long time. For example, it was learned that actually the immune system does recognize cancers. Cancer is not as invisible to the immune system as we had thought. The problem is actually even more devious than that. It's that cancer in many ways, for whatever reason, does things to actively thwart the immune system from being able to mount it in ways that, you know, things like viruses and bacteria typically don't. So figuring out the ways in which cancer was thwarting that immune system's ability to respond, that's really what allowed immunotherapy to happen. So, the sort of current advances and things that have been made in immunotherapy are all really a result of discoveries, figuring out what it was that cancer was doing, kind of handicapping some of those things. And that's really what's opened the door, I think, to this sort of first generation of immunotherapy.
Right. When were those discoveries first made?
Yeah, this is just one example, but it turns out that people who were just studying just how the immune system works realized that there were some proteins that were expressed on immune cells that were intentionally designed to act as like a brake on the system, right? Like, so, you know, you want your immune system to be able to fight off bacteria or something like that. But at some point along the way, you want the immune system to stop doing that. You don't want it to be revved up forever, right? And so there are mechanisms that allow immune cells to know, when do I need to stop working, right? So that was something that was sort of learned about just how our immune system works. And then come to find out that, coincidentally enough, cancers seem to be able to engage those little proteins and receptors, right? So that was another big discovery. And then the discovery happens that turns out that we can now build an antibody that prevents this interaction from happening. So I wonder what happens if we give that antibody to people with cancer. And that's really what led to the breakthroughs really about 20 years ago that showed that just delivering that antibody to people made such a big difference to cancer treatment. But these were things that, you know, as always happens, you know, developed iteratively and slowly and sometimes sort of accidentally, you know, over decades and things. Yeah.
That's so interesting. Are there any cancers that researchers have found that are resistant to immunotherapy?
Oh, for sure, yeah. So one of the things that we've learned along the way is that immunotherapy works against cancers where the immune system is making some type of an immune reaction. It's not strong enough to reject the cancers on their own, but it's just strong enough that if you can amplify it with immunotherapy, then you make a difference, right? And so the unfortunate and frustrating thing has been that, unfortunately, a lot of cancers are so evasive or so difficult to detect by the immune system that there just isn't enough of a signal. There's not enough of an initial immune response to be able to amplify. And so, you know, people like me who work with cancer patients, the frustrating thing has been everyone has heard about all these miraculous advances. And unfortunately, right now, you know, those miraculous things don't extend to those folks, primarily related to cancers that are just so difficult to detect the immune system that we need something. We need a new discovery to kind of be able to extend those benefits to those types of cancers. So things like pancreatic cancer, for instance, I see a lot of people with pancreatic cancer, and that's a really tricky cancer. That is, to the immune system, almost impenetrable. And so you can throw all the amplifying immunotherapies at it, but you need something in that particular case to start the process, you know, to start the initial spark of an immune reaction, and then maybe immunotherapy would work.
Mm-hmm. And what are some projects your lab is working on right now in this space?
Yeah, so our projects largely relate to, you know, taking cancers in experimental settings that really don't respond very well to immunotherapy, treating them with focused ultrasound, because what we're discovering is that under the right circumstances, treating a tumor with focused ultrasound initiates that first spark of an immune reaction. And then if you throw in immunotherapy on top of that, you're able to suddenly treat cancers, at least in the experimental setting, that, you know, previously didn't even get budged by things like immunotherapy.
That's so interesting. How did you discover that focused ultrasound could, you know, boost this immunotherapy?
You know, like a lot of things, not by planning or intelligence or wisdom or insight or anything like that. It was really just sort of providential, fortuitous circumstances. I moved to the University of Michigan in 2016, and through various totally random circumstances, got introduced to one of the biomedical engineers at the University of Michigan who has been working on focused ultrasound for quite some time. And to be honest, that initial introduction had nothing to do with immune response or my laboratory or anything. She was just really looking for a clinician to have as a collaborator on some of her grants, someone who could lend sort of clinical insight into liver cancers and pancreas cancers and this sort of thing. But, you know, as she explained how this particular type of focused ultrasound called histotripsy worked, you know, got to thinking, you know, it'd be kind of cool if we did some experiments to see if that could generate an immune response. And then thankfully that actually those first few experiments worked. And then, you know, that leads to another thing and another thing. And then fast forward just a couple of years later, now we've like dropped all of our other previous projects and are just focused on this.
Oh, that's incredible. And can you explain histotripsy to people who aren't familiar with it?
Sure. Yeah, I'll do my best. I'm not a biomedical engineer, so I'll just at the outset say that I'm sure 90% of it I couldn't be able to articulate. So here's my version of what I understand, and hopefully it's helpful to the audience. So it's an ultrasound technology. So we're all familiar with ultrasound, you know, like you put a probe on your heart or on the belly of a pregnant woman, and it uses sound waves to be able to see things. And it's nice because it doesn't, it's totally non-invasive. It doesn't cause any damage or whatever. So my understanding is that it was recognized that if you did ultrasound the wrong way, if you overlapped ultrasound pulses and made those ultrasound waves too strong, you could inadvertently cause tissue damage. And so for a while it was recognized as, you know, here's the thing that you try not to do. And the genesis of it was really, I think, born out of people like Charles Kane and Jen Hsu at the University of Michigan, who sort of recognized that what if we actually understood how this happened and did it on purpose, maybe we could actually use it to intentionally destroy tissues. And so really what it is it uses ultrasound pulses that are technically different than the ultrasound pulses that we use to look at your heart or the unborn baby or something like that, or your gallbladder. But what it does is it takes unusually high energy, very short wavelength ultrasound pulses, and then it converges a bunch of them onto a little single point in space that's just like a couple of millimeters in size. My understanding is that if you do that on purpose, it causes these weird, incredibly high amplitude pressure changes in a tiny point in space. And when that happens, it causes, through something called microbubbles, which I'm happy to get into, but basically it causes this pinpoint area of massive tissue destruction. It basically just tears cells apart. But it does it without needles, it does it without heat, it does it without radiation. And it, because it's millimeter sized, and you could actually see that area, and you basically just move the little focus of these ultrasound pulses around, and essentially you're able to just completely mechanically destroy an area with really some fairly high precision. I mean, the nice thing about it is that it only tears apart the cells that are in that zone, but you know, you move 1 millimeter away from that zone and nothing is happening. So it's a really precise, non-invasive way of destroying tissues. In that sense, it's very similar to other methods of focused ultrasound. I've come to appreciate that focused ultrasound is a very broad term that encompasses a lot of different things. And so I would say that the nuance of histotripsy compared to some other types is that it's a little bit of a standalone therapy. You don't have to administer anything else to create bubbles or something like that. It also doesn't generate any heat. So at the point of where the tissue damage is happening, they engineer those pulses in such a way it doesn't cause any heat. And so so those are the things that maybe distinguish it from some other modes of focused ultrasound.
Mm-hmm. And histotripsy was used in the Hope for Liver clinical trial that you were part of. Can you talk more about that clinical trial and your role in it?
Yeah, you bet. So it was a safety and efficacy trial. So it was really intended to see if histotripsy could work and if it was safe. And it was designed for liver tumors for a number of reasons. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of cancers either start or end up in the liver. So it's a common place to target. It's what I do in my clinical practice. I operate on people with liver tumors and things. And so it was people largely with advanced disease, people whose disease had no longer been responding to other forms of therapy. And it, I think it deserves mention, as is always the case, that this trial happened because there were people who were just generous enough to use their unfortunate circumstances as an opportunity to learn something. So yeah, so the trial was really that it was to see if histotripsy could work and if it would be safe for the use of liver tumors, and wanted to make sure that at least 3/4 of the time that when you took a picture of the tumor after the treatment, like within a day and a half or 2 days after the treatment, that at least 3/4 of the time the tumor was completely gone after the first try at treatment. So that, those were the goals. And you know, thankfully, I mean, we're talking about it because it met those goals. It actually killed it. I mean, the rather than being effective 3/4 of the time, it was effective like 96% of the time.
That's incredible.
The first try, yeah. And the adverse event rate was far below the quarter that we were willing to tolerate. It was closer to 6.5% or something like that. So it definitely met the sort of agreed upon criteria. And that's what led to a surprisingly fast willingness on the part of the FDA to approve it. So really, I was actually quite impressed by that, how that went. Shortly after the results became available and were presented, really quite quickly, the FDA approved it for use. And so now we can actually use it to treat people with liver tumors outside of, I mean, just as therapy.
And does it improve the longevity of their lives?
It's so great question. So, you know, in order to answer, and those are questions that are now being asked, but as you can imagine with these sorts of cancer trials, like you need years and years to be able to know. And so thankfully, the way that scientific and clinical advancement work is that as long as it's safe and as long as it has some short-term evidence of efficacy, you don't need to prove You don't need to collect 20 years worth of data to prove that it actually prolongs survival in order to be allowed to use it. But now the hard part becomes doing the responsible studies to show that it actually does make a difference in the long run. And so that's the sort of phase of data collection where we're in right now.
And what's next for your lab? Are you part of any other clinical trials or looking at other areas where this could be used?
Yeah, right. Because that clinical trial was for liver tumors, we can use it for liver tumors. But right now we don't have the, you know, official approval to use it, let's say, for the pancreas or kidney tumors. So those clinical trials are being designed now. And usually, you know, once you can show that it works in a couple of organs, then it stands to reason it's going to be safe in other organs as well. So my expectation is that things will accelerate. Because the nice thing about histotripsic technology is that there really isn't a part of the body where you automatically couldn't do it. I mean, in the laboratory, it's used for, you name it, brain, bone, soft tissue, pancreas, kidney. So, and it works just as well. In fact, a lot of those organs are actually technically easier to treat than the liver. So my expectation is that that will increase in terms of what it's used for. But in the laboratory, yeah, I mean, we're really interested on the laboratory side of things and really kind of understanding how it seemed to get back to earlier point. So it in the experimental setting and in the clinical setting, it sure seems to be having an effect on immune therapies and things. So as I mentioned, you know, if we treat in the laboratory, if we treat a tumor with histotripsy, and we just measure what the immune system is doing, there is a surprisingly strong response that the immune system is having just in response to having treated that tumor. And it's strong enough that we start to see immune responses at other sites. So trying to figure out like why that's happening and how that's happening has taken us on a really fun, unexpected sort of pathway of learning. It's doing a lot of things that are more complicated and way more interesting than what we had assumed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you first were working with this kind of technology, I mean, were you amazed at seeing these results or?
Yeah, I was. So, and the reason is because part of our research effort had always been to try to see how other types of therapies impact immune responses and things like that. Had always sort of been a longstanding side interest. And so we would periodically treat tumors with, you know, things that we do in the clinic, thermal ablation, radiation, surgery, whatever. And it was always, to be totally honest with you, at least in the laboratory setting, pretty underwhelming. Like if it did anything at all, it was really pretty hard to detect, nothing to, you know, brag about and stuff. And so, to be totally frank, my expectations because of that experience were relatively modest, you know, when we tried to do it with histotripsy. And it was just surprising how much of an impact it had. At the same time, you know, we also do a lot of immunotherapy in the experimental setting. So we were kind of used to, you know, what happens when you give immunotherapy, which you know works.
Are there any conditions that you're particularly interested in or see as an important emerging topic in the focus ultrasound field?
Yeah, for sure. So I think that kind of like we talked about earlier, there are some cancers that are easier to treat with immunotherapy than others. And so always one of the driving things for us has been, could we figure out some way to use histotripsy to make the really hard to treat cancers for immunotherapy, things like pancreatic cancer, and could we make them, you know, responsive to immunotherapy? For sure in the laboratory setting, we do that. I mean, we definitely see evidence of that. So, you know, on the translational side, of course, there's a lot of interest in seeing if we can use that histotripsy or other modalities of focused ultrasound for that purpose. And that's not new. I mean, that's been a goal for you name it, any type of tumor-directed therapy. And we've learned, for example, that after we treat a tumor with histotripsy, not only do we, you know, destroy the part of the tumor that we want to destroy, but we cause a lot of architectural changes in the rest of the tumor. For instance, tumors have a certain way of growing blood vessels, and this way totally helps the tumor. It doesn't help the rest of the body. In fact, it makes it harder for us to treat tumors because they are almost protected by this bizarre network of almost impenetrable blood vessels and things. So, you know, accidentally we are discovering that histotripsy seems to have a weird side effect of actually altering the architecture and anatomy of those blood vessels in ways that actually allow us to treat tumors a little bit better. It may also explain why it's having some of these immune effects.
So what excites you about the future of focused ultrasound and all the promise there is in the field?
It's different. You know, a lot of good progress happens in an iterative sort of way. So like, you know, if you look at all the progress we've made, let's say in cancer, it's, you know, here's a new chemotherapy drug. Here's another chemotherapy drug, which is similar to the last one, but it works 2% better. And after a while, those 2% incremental things add up to, you know, a 30% improvement or something like that. And that's important, you know, like that's a, but every once in a while, you have something that's very non-iterative, you know, like something that's completely new and disruptive and opens up a whole new option for investigation. And I feel like in many respects, focused ultrasound is that, you know, it's not just in terms of what it feels like to the patient, but also in terms of what it's actually doing to the tumor. And as we've learned in the laboratory, what it's actually doing to the environment of the tumor and all the things, the blood vessels, the immune system that are surrounding it, totally different. And so I think one of the things that's exciting to me is the opportunity to hitch your interests onto something that's completely uncharted. I'm optimistic, as are a lot of people, that this will be, you know, a thing that offers breakthroughs that we weren't able to make in an iterative sort of way. But the other thing that's exciting to me, and I'm still in the process of kind of learning about this, but I've come to appreciate that there's this whole network of people who are interested in focused ultrasound that have established a long time before I ever even knew what focused ultrasound was. And there is something, I will say, there's something about the fact that it is new, the fact that it is disruptive. It clearly, I've noticed that it attracts a certain type of persistent / unorthodox personality type that's really very interesting and fun to be around. And so that's also quite exciting and motivational, is just being part of that sort of scientific and clinical community.
How can listeners keep up with you and your lab?
So right now, I live at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and amazing academic medical center. Everything is all together, you know, the clinical enterprise, the research enterprise, and this sort of thing. But we're looking to grow. And so one thing we're doing, for instance, is we're actually in the process of building another place where we can deliver histotripsy on the west side of the state. But to take advantage of that, we're also So the University of Michigan has a hospital on the west side of the state. And so we're putting together a histotripsy program there. And to be totally honest, capacity there, it's just easier to get into. So we're really eager to use that as an advantage to be able to offer the treatment to more people in a quicker way. But at the same time, we also don't want to lose sight of the research side of things. And so we are actively partnering with this amazing research institution on the west side of the state called the Van Andel Institute, who has established itself as really like an international expert on translational research and stuff. And so this is going to be a lot of fun. Like, we're going to build a clinical translational program between the U of M hospital on the west side of the state and the Van Andel, so that in addition to treating people with histotripsy under protocols and things, being able to take biopsies, being able to take tumor tissue, bring it up the street to the Van Andel, to continue the, really, to basically do all the things that we're doing in the preclinical clinical setting, the laboratory now, but this time on human tissues and things. And so I promise, Allison, that when we build that program, we'll build with it a way to make sure that we kind of communicate that progress to people who are interested.
Well, that's great. And it sounds like a very exciting time for you and your team.
We're excited, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Cho, for joining us. This has been such a great conversation, and we wish you all the best in your move to the west side of Michigan.
Well, thanks so much. It's really a lot of fun being here. Thanks for inviting me.
This episode of Curing with Sound has been presented by the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. If you would like to learn more about focused ultrasound or the foundation, visit our website at fusfoundation.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social media.